From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief. State of Belief can be heard across the country weekends on Air America Radio. The program and this podcast are made possible by Interfaith Alliance and its members. For more information on Interfaith Alliance and its work promoting faith and freedom throughout America, visit interfaithalliance.org. And while you're there, please consider supporting State of Belief and this free podcast service by making a tax-deductible donation to Interfaith Alliance Foundation. We need your help to keep State of Belief on the air. Thank you for listening.
Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone, to State of Belief. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, president of Interfaith Alliance, broadcasting from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. And on today's show, an unprecedented look inside one of the most detrimental political and social movements of all time. My guest will be journalist Max Blumenthal, author of the best-selling work Republican Gomorrah, a book which may end up being the definitive tome on the religious right. And as we are bombarded with obituaries for the Republican Party, Blumenthal will remind us of the dangerous power that continues to be wielded by religious conservatives like Tony Perkins and James Dobson, from the halls of Congress to the Supreme Court to local school boards and libraries where you live. So stay tuned. My conversation with Max Blumenthal to come, but first, Jews around the world will celebrate Yom Kippur this weekend, the Day of Atonement, the most solemn and important of all Jewish holidays. From sundown on Sunday to nightfall on Monday, Jews will engage in fasting and intensive prayer, often spending most of the day in synagogue services. But one Jewish organization in Cincinnati, Ohio, is offering a new way to celebrate. Online. That's right, online. The group is called OurJewishCommunity.org, an internet community described as the world's first online progressive synagogue. Our Jewish Community was founded by Robert Barr, a rabbi at the congregation Beth Adam in Cincinnati, and Rabbi Laura Baum. This year, Rabbis Laura Baum and Robert Barr will offer live streaming of their Yom Kippur services so those who don't make it to synagogue can log on and watch the services from the comfort of their own homes. Rabbi Barr joins me now by phone. Rabbi, thanks for being with us on State of Belief.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, first off, an online synagogue, was this born out of a hope that making religion, let's say, a little more convenient might attract more numbers?
Not exactly. I think it was born out of the reality that about 50% or more of the Jewish community isn't affiliated with the congregation at all. And so we realized that many people had no association with the congregation, and we wanted to create a vehicle for people to be able to relate to a congregation, relate to the Jewish community, and that's what really sort of was the genesis of it.
Mm-hmm.
We also recognize as well that for many Jews, the community, the congregations that may exist where they're living may not speak in a progressive, liberal Jewish voice to them, and so that's our voice, and that's the way we approach Judaism from a humanistic perspective, that we could provide that as well and give them access to a congregation in a different way and create community online.
Robert, Jewish prayer traditionally has been a communal experience, requiring at least 10 people to participate, 10 men by tradition. How do you get at that concept, try to maintain that concept over the internet?
Well, I think in your question was actually the answer. we began with 10 men. That was how our ancestors defined it. And slowly, and it took a very long time, they included women. When they began to realize, gee, women are really equals, right? Mm-hmm. Because unfortunately, Judaism has elements of sexism like other religions seem to have. Religion should be evolutionary, and it shouldn't be static. And the fact is, they talked about community. They visualized community as people being near each other, just physically. We recognize that people can be in community also using technology in ways that they didn't have. Mm-hmm. So we're bringing people together in a new way. And in our congregation at Beth Adam, our bricks and mortar congregation, we do a memorial service late in the afternoon on Yom Kippur, realizing that that's a very sort of intimate service for our members, because we read the names of all their deceased loved ones. We've actually created an online memorial service for our online congregants.
Hmm.
That's different. That one actually will be pre-recorded, and we're actually encouraging our online participants to send us photographs of their deceased loved ones that we're putting into not a montage is the word, but a presentation that'll include readings and things of that nature.
Robert Barr, the founding rabbi of the congregation Beth Adam in Cincinnati, Ohio, is also the founder, along with Rabbi Laura Baum, of the world's first online progressive synagogue. Check it out, www.ourjewishcommunity.org. Rabbi Barr, thanks for being with us on State of Belief.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And I hope the holidays are meaningful for you.
Oh, thanks very much.
I'm Welton Gaddy. We've got to pause for a quick break right now, but when we come back, don't you leave. When we come back, my conversation with best-selling author Max Blumenthal about his new book on the religious right. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. To State of Belief, I'm Welton Gaddy. This past weekend, religious conservatives gathered in Washington, D.C. for the annual Values Voter Summit, a three-day event hosted by the Family Research Council, where religious right kingpins like the Council's Tony Perkins and Focus on the Family's James Dobson promote their conservative agenda for American society. And unashamedly, politicians scramble to stand at the Value Voters podium in close proximity to getting the religious right's blessing. In the past, everyone from Newt Gingrich to Hillary Clinton have strolled the conference halls in hopes of pandering to that electoral gold mine, the Values Voters. And even in the age of Obama, a presidency that was supposed to mark the death of the religious right, this year's event still drew well over 1,000 attendees and featured speeches from Mitt Romney, Tim Pawlenty, and of course Mike Huckabee. Let me give you a quick sampling of the sessions that you could have attended had you been present. Obamacare, rationing your life away. Thugocracy, fighting the vast left-wing conspiracy. Global warming hysteria and countering the homosexual agenda in public schools. The Values Voters Summit is just one of many outings that my next guest has attended in the 6 years since he began reporting on the religious right. Max Blumenthal is a senior writer for the Daily Beast, and his journalism has also appeared in The Nation and The Huffington Post. He's just written the book, Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. Republican Gomorrah is one of the best books I've seen on this subject, and I am delighted to be joined right now by Max Blumenthal. Max, thanks for being here.
Yeah, great to be here.
Well, you begin your expose of the religious right actually differently, I think, than some people do. You start with this guy named R.J. Rush Dooney. Appropriately, for anybody who has studied the religious right in depth, as you have, he's a religious fundamentalist who wrote a book in the 70s called The Institutes of Biblical Law. Tell our listeners, because I bet a lot of them don't know, who was Rush Dooney and what was his vision, if you can call it that, for American society?
R.J. Rush Dooney was the descendant of six generations of Armenian high priests whose family was essentially wiped out in the Armenian genocide. When he came to the United States, he had concluded that civilization was fallen and it needed to be reconstructed along fundamentalist biblical lines. And so he laid out a program for replacing the secular government of the United States, the Constitution, with biblical law. And under Rush Dooney's program, all of the functionings of the federal government would be replaced by the church. So road building, public schooling, health care would be handled by the church, and everyone would have to tithe 10%. Unbelievers, or those who aren't Christian, would have second-class status, or essentially would become oppressed officially. Those who violated biblical law, violated the 613 case laws in Leviticus, would be subject to execution. So adulterers, abortion doctors, loose women, witches, blasphemers would all face the firing squad. I guess you could call this the Christian right's trigger option.
And where Rush Dooney had vision, a born-again evangelical millionaire named Howard F. Amundson Jr. had the money, the funds. Amundson was himself a sort of eccentric character. What were some of the projects that Amundson bankrolled under the influence of Rush Dooney's philosophy?
Right. Well, Amundson, just to give a little background, is the son of California's most famous philanthropist, Howard Amundson, who founded Washington Mutual and who died when Amundson Jr. was 18, leaving him $300 million. Jr. promptly went insane and wound up spending 2 years in a mental institution. And when he came out, he met Rush Dooney, who helped him stabilize his life through this extreme strain of evangelical Christianity. Amundson most famously funded Prop 8 in California, which banned same-sex marriage, but he also provided 50% of the funding for Prop 22, which before that banned same-sex marriage in California but was overturned by a court. He's funded Republican candidates and initiatives throughout the states, as well as the Christian right political empire of James Dobson.
Hmm. Well, now, you mentioned Dobson. People like James Dobson, former head of Focus on the Family, attorney Tony Perkins of Family Research Council, aren't out there advocating that we execute homosexuals. So how do we get from the work of Rush Dooney to the modern religious right of people like Dobson and Perkins? Is there a direct line?
No, I couldn't draw a straight line, but you could draw a crooked line that also goes through Francis Schaeffer, who is accused of plagiarizing Rush Dooney, who gave the Christian right the tactics it needed to implement the blueprint that Rush Dooney provided. The tactic was, instead of mobilizing against racial integration, which they were preoccupied with before Francis Schaeffer, it was abortion. And Dobson was watching Schaeffer carefully and adopted abortion. But who is Dobson? He wasn't a religious leader. Mm-hmm. He wasn't, he had no theological training like you do. I mean, you could probably crush him when it comes to biblical text. He was a psychologist, a child psychologist who earned his fame and fortune through a book called Dare to Discipline, which is essentially a manual for beating your child. And he leveraged this money into a giant empire that, you know, helped make the Christian right what it is by adopting issues like abortion and, you know, opposition to homosexuality into his self-help regimen, which, you know, millions of Americans have subscribed to.
Isn't it interesting? I had a personal conversation with Dobson one time, and he made a big deal of the fact that you've just pointed out that he's not a minister. How do you think he ended up being the most influential religious right leader and player in national politics without that credential?
Yeah, and that goes to the heart of my book. you know, James Dobson's strength doesn't come from his theological training or his political acumen. It comes from his correspondence department, which handles thousands of letters every day from middle Americans, average people seeking help with mundane problems, from their child's bedwetting problem to marital strife to alcoholism to pornography addiction. The correspondence department at Focus on the Family, Dobson's center in Colorado Springs, is so large it has its own zip code. And so once these people send their letters in and they get some Dobson-approved advice, they're entered into a data bank, and then they're bombarded with political mailings about the so-called homosexual agenda, about abortion, about feminism, about environmentalism, and they're transformed slowly from these people who came to beg at Dobson's feet for advice into confident Republican shock troops who are fighting the real source of their problems, which is liberalism.
I mean, I know you know this fact. Dan Gilgoff over at U.S. News and World Report pointed out recently that Dobson visited the Bush White House 24 times from 2001 to 2006, and yet Dobson always says his goal is not power, that he's not overtly trying to express his will and assert it over Republican politicians. Is Dobson trying to fool us with this bit about not wanting to wear a crown of some kind?
Well, a lot of the hate mail I received during this period when Focus on the Family was upset with some of the reporting I did, and the people referred to him as Saint Jim Dobson and told me Dobson's concern is with helping families. And I quote some of these letters in my book, Republican Gomorrah, to show the mentality of Dobson's followers and how somnambulistic they are, how subservient they are and sycophantic. And so Dobson isn't really concerned with how we see him. He doesn't even do any secular media outside of Bill O'Reilly. He's concerned with how his flock sees him, and he needs them to see him as a magic helper, a strict father who's helping them through their everyday problems, not a cynical political leader, which he actually is. And one of those meetings with the White House concerned White House policy on Iran, which is really disturbing that someone like James Dobson would be consulted on how we should deal with Iran, mm-hmm. a country that, you know, is at nuclear crosshairs with Israel.
Well, and you can never forget that Dobson got a call from the White House about a Supreme Court appointee before members of the Judiciary Committee got that call.
Yeah, Karl Rove, and I talk about this too in my book, that Karl Rove beseeched Dobson for his support for the Harriet Myers appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, Dobson was instrumental in guiding Samuel Alito through his confirmation hearings. And I would say that, you know, maybe the Republican Party is shattered, but they did manage to install this extremely radical right-wing bloc on the Supreme Court that's going to be there for a generation. So their influence endures.
I'm talking with Max Blumenthal, who is a senior writer for the Daily Beast. We're talking about his new book, Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. We're going to take a very quick break. Hang on, we'll be right back. This is State of Belief on Air America Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. My guest today is journalist Max Blumenthal, author of the new book, Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party, a book which traces the rise and the influence of the religious right. The book is a powerful expose of the work of religious conservatives like Focus on the Family's James Dobson and Family Research Council head Tony Perkins. I asked Max if he tried to interview James Dobson.
I have spoken to his people, and they've identified me actually on air as one of their enemies, and they directed 7,000 hate mails into my email box in 1 week. So Dobson wasn't inclined to speak to me, but I toured Focus on the Family and was separated. I came within 5 feet of Dobson, separated by bulletproof glass, as he delivered a tirade on Fox News against Hugo Chavez, the leader of Venezuela, and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the leader of Iran, as if he were somehow qualified to discuss foreign policy. But this was the Bush era when Dobson had reached the mountaintop and was called on for his wisdom on everything from foreign affairs to domestic politics to, again, how to spank your child, or kernels of wisdom that he offered in his book Bringing Up Boys, which is, if your small child, your small boy has an authority problem, bring him into the shower with you and show him your penis.
I know you're right. I'm just trying to think of a good segue to my next question.
Yeah.
Because
speaking of penises,
let's go to politicians for a second. Who are some of the politicians that you write about that you found to be most closely associated with the religious right?
Well, one of the people I wrote about extensively is Senator David Vitter, who's not a particularly powerful member of Congress anymore, because he was revealed to have been having an affair, if not affairs, with high-priced prostitutes. But after this happened, and he had been one of the favorites of Dobson and Tony Perkins. Tony Perkins was an old ally of David Vitter's in Louisiana, mm-hmm. and they held these Stand for Marriage rallies for Vitter during his 2004 campaign. These were presented as anti-gay marriage rallies, but really what they were get-out-the-vote rallies to get the so-called value voters to vote for Vitter, and it worked. So Vitter was always beholden to the Christian right, and when this scandal happened, you would have expected that Tony Perkins and Dobson would have called for Vitter to step down, but they couldn't do that like they did with Larry Craig, who was arrested for soliciting sex with a Senator Larry Craig, the third most conservative senator in Congress, arrested for soliciting sex with an undercover cop in a bathroom stall, because Idaho is a red state where Larry Craig was from, but where Vitter's from, it's a purple state. And with the Christian right, really, it's all about power. So they did everything they could to keep Vitter in the Senate. Perkins said, Vitter has asked for forgiveness, and I think, he's been forgiven, and David wants to repent. So when David Vitter came back to the Senate after confessing this affair, the Republicans greeted him with a standing ovation, mm-hmm. and the Christian right has worked with him ever since. Vitter's first speech after he was sworn in this congressional term was a speech in an anti-abortion rally on the National Mall, and he's out there overcompensating for his affair as one of the most conservative senators in Congress. And so the Christian right, is actually probably happy that he had this affair, because now they can use Vitter as a human tool for their agenda.
You mentioned that Perkins' political career was derailed by scandal. I'd like for you to talk a little bit about that. But what's even more interesting is that you conclude that Perkins, in his present position, yields more power than he would have had he been in Congress. Tell us about all that.
Yeah, exactly. Tony Perkins is the president of the Family Research Council, which is the premier lobbying outfit for the Christian right in Washington. It was founded by Dobson and focus on the family. And through that outfit, Perkins is able to strong arm all of the right wing members of the Republican Congress, which is basically the entire Republican Congress. He's behind the rumor that Barack Obama's health care plan includes a provision to force taxpayers to fund abortion. And the Family Research Council is running ads about that. But I talk about where Perkins came from. First, he was a member of Operation Rescue. He was involved in violent clinic blockades in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, while he was on the Baton Rouge police force. So he was fired from the Baton Rouge police force for that. Then when he pursued a political career and tried to run for Senate, his Senate campaign was derailed because the press revealed that he signed a check while he was running another campaign for his mentor, Woody Jenkins, some years before, to David Duke, the former Ku Klux Klan leader, for $90,000 to purchase David Duke's mailing list. Tony Perkins has been involved with other white supremacists like the Council of Conservative Citizens, and he would never tell me, I've tried to interview him about this, what he said to the Council of Conservative Citizens when he spoke to their 2001 fundraiser. So Tony Perkins moves to Washington from this white supremacist environment that he had put himself in. And he becomes one of the most powerful leaders of the Christian right. And I think, is the future face of the Christian right since he's young. CNN will have him on. And he's very presentable. And none of this stuff about the Council of Conservative Citizens has really come to light.
Did you put Newt Gingrich in the religious right fold. I know he's a fascinating example. Another guy that had to go through Dobson's radio show
right.
to get approval. What do you do with Gingrich?
Well, Newt Gingrich's rise and fall is evidence, and then rise again is evidence of the Christian right's dominance of the Republican Party. Newt Gingrich fell from his leadership position in the Republican Congress because Dobson's sick Tom DeLay, who used to be known as Hot Tub Tommy in Texas before Dobson converted him into the Hammer, a hardcore Christian right fundamentalist, who was sicked against Newt Gingrich because Gingrich was having an affair with a woman who was 20 years younger than him, who was on the congressional payroll, and because the Contract for America didn't mention homosexuality and abortion. And so Gingrich's career seemed to be over. But in 2007, Gingrich went on Dobson's radio show, confessed all of his affairs because he's a very Machiavellian figure and understands the culture of the Christian right, understands the importance of confession. Dobson welcomed him back into the fray, brought him to all of his conferences, and helped Gingrich climb back to this position he's in, where he's at least an intellectual leader of the Republican grassroots. Gingrich then converted to Catholicism, which is really interesting. And as Deal Hudson told me, this Catholic right intellectual who had his own fall from grace and was once an advisor to the Bush administration, Newt's sins have been forgiven. He's confessed. And as far as we're concerned, what he did in his past with his three marriages never happened.
My guest today is Max Blumenthal, author of Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. We're going to take a very quick break, but we'll be right back. You don't want to miss us. I want to ask Max about this narrative in the 2008 campaign of the religious right being dead. Hang on, we'll be right back. I'm Welton Gaddy. This is State of Belief, and with me today is journalist Max Blumenthal, whose new book is called Republican Gomorrah, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. Max, thanks for sticking around.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Now, the narrative of the 2008 campaign was that the religious right is dead. We heard that from E.J. Dionne. We heard that from Jim Wallis at Sojourners. I don't see any evidence of the death, and I think the funeral is premature. Where are you on that?
Well, I mean, it was ridiculous, the narrative during the 2008 campaign, and it was evidence of wishful thinking at best. I mean, if you can even call it thinking at all, it was really a horrible analysis of the situation. The situation was that the Christian right had totally dominated a party that was weaker than ever, the Republican Party. And I think people misconstrue the Christian right with the Republican Party. What happened, you saw figures, pundits like Bill Press, who's a friend of mine and who I really like, saying the Christian right was dead because Mike Huckabee hadn't picked up any steam in the Iowa primary and no one was endorsing him. Mike Huckabee goes on to win the Iowa primary on the strength of the Christian right. Mm-hmm. The Christian right was dead, according to Frank Rich, because Giuliani's campaign was doing so well and he was polling so well. He said the Ayatollahs of the American right, Dobson and Falwell, are dead. Giuliani tries to run in Florida, finishes in third place behind even Mike Huckabee, and his campaign never even gets out of Florida, and couldn't even campaign in any other states because all the primary states that mattered were controlled by Christian right elements. And in the end, John McCain won because Huckabee and Romney split the conservative vote. And who did McCain have to bring on as vice president because he was detested by the Christian right? Sarah Palin, who the Christian right considers Queen Esther from the Bible. So the idea that the Christian right is dead has just been refuted time and time again. And the idea that we were going to have this postpartisan kumbaya fest after the campaign and after Obama won was pretty much discounted on 9/12.
The day after the election, speaking of that, my good friend journalist Bill Moyers was on Fresh Air with Terry Gross talking about the McCain campaign. And Bill said that he believed McCain failed because he had been, these are Bill's words, trying to make his bed with porcupines. Now, I believe Bill was talking about how McCain had previously held the religious right in disdain, but here he was trying to kowtow to them to get elected. Did you see it playing out that way, and especially with the selection of Sarah Palin?
Well, Bill Moyers knows what he's talking about, as usual. John McCain had wanted to nominate as his vice presidential candidate his best friend in the Senate, Joseph Lieberman. And if he had done that, he would have at least been able to compete for Florida and some other swing states. But James Dobson went on the air and declared that he could not vote for John McCain at that point. However, he would be watching him closely to see who he nominates for the vice presidency. And behind the scenes, Dobson was corresponding with Sarah Palin, congratulating her on not aborting what he called her that little Down syndrome baby. Those were Dobson's words, not mine. And so there was clearly a relationship with Sarah Palin. When Sarah Palin was named, Dobson gave his full-throated support to John McCain, and so did so many other people on the among the Christian right, the movement that controls the Republican Party. And so because John McCain was so detested by the Republican grassroots, Sarah Palin was the only logical choice, even though she seemed illogical, and Joseph Lieberman, to, you know, rational political observers, whatever they think of Lieberman, might have seemed like a more logical choice.
I've got to ask you about what's going on in our nation right now, and refer that to your observation that what happened with Sarah Palin during the election rallies was a foreshadowing of what we're now seeing in the town hall meetings. Can you draw that line for us?
The nomination of Sarah Palin brought this dark force into the Republican Party, into the Republican campaign of 2008, and electrified it. That was part of the goal of naming her. However, the campaign that she initiated, which was a campaign for her own national prominence that existed independent of John McCain, you know, she had gone rogue, and which was demonstrated by appeals to resentment that weren't even approved by the McCain campaign, comparing Barack Obama to a terrorist, saying he's not one of us, that he's un-American, leading to these accusations that he wasn't born in the United States. They continued beyond the inauguration, and they've exploded into the open, and we've seen the results of it, and the metastasizing of this base resentment that started with the Palin rallies on 9/12. And they've exploded into displays of open racism and violent rhetoric. You know, I was at the rally on 9/12, and I saw signs that said, "This time we came unarmed." I think everyone should go back to 1995 and to the Clinton administration and remember when a anti-government right-wing terrorist blew up the federal government building in Oklahoma City after Newt Gingrich shut the federal government down. This is a campaign by the right against the federal government. It's not just against Obama. It's about against the government of the United States.
Max, I'm not sure I'm going to say this right. You know enough stuff to be 70 years old.
I feel like I'm 100 sometimes.
But you're in your early 30s. You've spent most of your professional career covering the religious right. Where in the world does that interest in this subject come from?
I was raised in a political family in Washington, and I remember as a kid, my mother was working for People for the American Way, and she had said, "I have to go away for 3 weeks." And I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "I'm going to Greensboro, North Carolina. They're trying to ban books down there, including Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain." And I said, "Why are they trying to ban books?" I think I was 8 years old. I didn't, you know, how would an 8-year-old understand why they were trying to ban Mark Twain? Mm-hmm. And she explained it to me, and I started to watch these videos that she was producing about the rise of the moral majority. And I was actually in a commercial narrated by Gregory Peck against the nomination of Robert Bork to the Supreme Court. And you can see that actually on YouTube. So I was exposed to this at an early age, and I actually just found a drawing I did when I was 8 years old of Pat Robertson screaming, "I'm a bigot."
So, yeah, I mean, it was almost destiny, it sounds like to me. Yeah. Now, you would not be surprised, would you, if someone tried to ban your book?
It would be an honor.
Max Blumenthal is a senior writer for the Daily Beast. His writing and video reporting have also appeared in The Nation, The Huffington Post, Salon. His new book is called Republican Gomorra, Inside the Movement That Shattered the Party. Let me tell you, friends, we have only touched the surface of what you can find in that book. You need to get it and read it. It's very enlightening. Max, congratulations on the book, and thanks so much for being with us on State of Belief.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me.
I'm Welton Gaddy. You know, I found this conversation with Max Blumenthal disturbing on several levels. More adeptly and perceptively than most treatises on the religious right, Max has melded the public posture of religious right leaders with very personal incidents in their lives that shaped their mentality, fired their Machiavellian persistence, and closed their minds to ideas from people who differ profoundly from their theocratic tendencies. The title of Max's book, Republican Gomorra, suggests that the ravages left in the wake of the religious right are all in the Republican Party. Actually, I am sad to say the religious right also has changed the Democratic Party. It has influenced the manner in which people understand the faith community in this nation, and it has poisoned the minds of scores of young people who are giving up on the possibility of a meaningful career of service in politics. The ultimate victory for the religious right would be for us, in our attempt to defeat the religious right, to begin to employ their tactics, manipulation, words, and actions in an effort to change them. I want religion to be religion and government to be government. The current religious right is wrong and not very religious. I'm eager for the nation to know religion that is right, religion that is a friend of freedom, religion that seeks rights for all people, even for those who may be wrong. Well, friends, that's our show for this week. So do you want to get in touch with us? I hope so. Write us. We want you to write us. Go to stateofbelief.com. Click on the Contact Us page, or remember, we've got phones. You can call us at 202-238-3291. That's 202-238-3291. We'll be right back here on State of Belief next week with more stories from the intersection of religion and politics, more interesting people, something probably to disturb you a little bit, and maybe even something to comfort you. Be with us then, but until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along.
State of Belief. Religion and radio done differently.